Good morning. It is Tuesday, May 23rd, 2006 at approximately 9:30 a.m. here in the State Capitol Building, Room 412 in Pier, and this is the time and place for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting. I am going to go through the roll call of people who have indicated that they're going to be calling in via the telephone. So please note that you're available when I call your name, and at the end, if I have not called your name and you're on the line, please let us know as well. First one is Doug Adol. Doug?
Here.
Thank you, Doug. Jerry Heiberger?
Here.
Ryan Taylor?
Here.
James Groft?
Here.
Pat Mastel?
Here.
Jason Topp?
Here.
James Carroll?
Present.
Cindy Leverton?
Here.
Meredith Taylor? Meredith? Oh, is it Meredith Moore?
Meredith Moore.
Well, now I know why you didn't respond to Meredith Taylor. Thank you. Dave Ross?
Present.
Jim Kramer?
He's not here.
Okay, Jim won't be calling in. Thank you. Joanne Haas?
Present.
And Todd Guerrero?
Yep, present for the Otter Tail matter.
Great. Thank you. Is there anyone else on the line that I have not called?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Colleen Siebel from Quest.
Good morning, Colleen.
Morning.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Talbot Wisorik for WWC and Alto.
Thank you. Anyone else on the line? All right. With that, we'll move to the agenda of the commission meeting. And the first item on the commission agenda is administration. Approval of the minutes of the commission meeting held on March 4th, April 11th, April 20th, and we're going to wait on the May 9th commission minute approval, but we do have the March 14th, April 11th, and April 20th minutes.
Move approval.
Second.
And I concur. Next item is under consumer reports, status reporting commissioner on consumer utility inquiries and complaints received by the commission. Ms. Gregg.
Thank you, Commissioner Slark. The commission has received a total of 104 contacts since the last report was prepared for the May 9th, 2006 commission meeting. 16 of the contacts involved telecommunications, 23 involved electrical services, 11 contacts involved natural gas services, 2 contacts involved gas and electric services, 11 contacts involved cellular phone, 8 contacts were related to the Do Not Call Registry, and 33 contacts were related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 818 of the 930 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved, and 1,671 of the 1,885 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the commissioners? Seeing none, we'll move down the agenda to electricity. First item is EL05022. Oh, you want that at the very front. Okay. I have been told that we're going to go to telecommunications item number 5. So we will go out of order on the agenda and go to item number 5. And that is the arbitration agreements. Number 5 is in the matter of the petition for arbitration of interconnection agreements in dockets TC06, 036, 06037, 06038, 06039, 06040, 06041, and 06042. And the question in these dockets is, shall the commission assess a deposit not to exceed $75,000 on the parties to the dockets listed above pursuant to SDCL 493144? And shall the commission set a procedural schedule for the dockets? And shall the commission grant the parties motion to consolidate dockets TC 06, 036 through 042? And Mr. Smith, how do we want to go forward procedurally?
Ms. Weiss, did you want to?
Sure.
Thank you.
This is Rolaine Weiss, and I'll start with the first two questions. First question is to assess the deposit. We are able to assess a deposit pursuant to 493144, and I would ask that the commission assess that deposit. On the second question, the procedural schedule, the parties and myself and Ms. Graff have decided to have a conference call on Thursday, so I think we can just skip that question, and hopefully we can work out a procedural schedule between among all the parties. And then I would let the other parties address the motion to consolidate.
Thank you, and I would also ask the parties if they have any objection to the deposit to let us know, but if not, we'll assume that that's okay with you. Let's see. Ms. Moore, are you up for the parties?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Meredith Moore, appearing on behalf of the Golden West Companies, as set forth in the docket previously stated. We had, at the time of filing the six separate motions, or petitions, excuse me, for arbitration, had anticipated that those would be consolidated given the similarity of all of the major issues that need to be addressed by the Commission in the arbitration proceedings, and accordingly have now made that motion to consolidate all of those, again, because we anticipate that the identity of the expert witnesses will be the same for all of the dockets, as well as the majority of the testimony. And once those overarching issues are decided by the Commission, we believe any unique issues, such as individual rates for each of the Golden West companies, can be addressed quite easily.
Thank you. Any questions from the Commissioners? If not, Mr. Wysorek?
We have no objection to consolidation, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions from Commissioners? Comments from staff? If not, I will move then that the Commission assess a deposit not to exceed $75,000 on the parties to the dockets listed above pursuant to SDCL 493144, and that the Commission grant the parties' motion to consolidate dockets TC06036 through 06042, and that we take no action on the procedural schedule because the parties and staff are going to work on that issue.
Second.
Thank you. Now we'll go back to the regular order of the agenda to electricity EL05022 in the matter of the application by Ottertail Power Company on behalf of Big Stone 2 co-owners for an energy conversion facility permit for the construction of the Big Stone 2 project. And on the addendum, the question is today, shall the Commission approve the stipulation agreement, and shall the Commission approve the stipulation agreement regarding Sierra Club's withdrawal as a party? And Mr. Smith, how do we want to pursue this procedurally?
Mr. Guerrero, did you want to go first on this on behalf of Ottertail or Ms. Haas?
Mr. Smith, sure, I'll go ahead. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Todd Guerrero, G-U-E-R-R-E-R-O, Lindquist and Venom in Minneapolis, appearing also with Joanne Hossey of the Boyce Greenfield Law Firm in Sioux Falls. Mr. Chairman, before you are essentially two stipulations, as you indicated. One is, I'll take the Sierra Club stipulation first. I'm not sure if there's anybody on the call from the Sierra Club.
And I'll check here. Is there anyone in the audience on behalf of the Sierra Club? We see no one here in Pier either.
Mr. Chair, we've worked and have been working with the Sierra Club for some time now on both discovery issues and related withdrawal of the Sierra Club from this particular docket. I think it's safe to say that the Sierra Club is more interested in pursuing the air permitting issues that will be before and that are before the South Dakota Department of Environment and Natural Resources. And some of the documents that you see in the proposed stipulation reflect that and really go to the issue of air permitting issues. We have signed the stipulation. Sierra Club has signed the stipulation, and we ask that it be approved. With respect to the stipulation in with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy and the other environmental groups, we also have been working with them with respect to discovery issues. As you may recall, They had filed recently a motion to compel certain discovery. We have worked with them, worked out their discovery dispute, and we'll be providing information to them with respect to the computer modeling issues that they essentially want to review. And again, I'll pause, but I'm not sure if there's anybody here from MCEA or any of the other environmental interveners.
And we see no one here in the audience here in Pierre as well.
So, Mr. Chair, the same motion, stipulation, we have agreed to provide certain information. We've also agreed to amend the scheduling and procedural order just a bit to allow for additional time for environmental groups to file some additional testimony in the case. That will be filed by May 26th, essentially Friday. We will have until June 22nd to file some responding testimony. Parties have signed the stipulation, and we ask that it be approved. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I believe our general counsel has a question for you, Mr. Guerrero.
Mr. Guerrero and Ms. Kramer, on Friday, the commission issued a third scheduling order in the case, and that was attempting to address the scheduling issues that were raised in the MCEA stipulation. By approving the stipulation today, are you both in agreement that the commission's approval of it with respect to those scheduling issues comports with the third scheduling order?
Mr. Smith, I don't have that order in front of me. I was wondering if you'd be so kind as to give me the pertinent dates in the amended order.
The dates that were put in the amended order are the dates as they're set forth in the stipulation.
Oh, okay.
I guess I'm curious as to why you don't have that.
I have it. I don't have it in front of
okay.
me right now.
The dates are the same.
Okay.
Again, we remember on Friday we had some quibbling among various persons about particular characterizations of what was due on what dates, and as my recollection, it was circulated to all the parties, and I believe we reached agreement among all parties that the language suitably addressed the concerns in the stipulation.
And I certainly was not made aware of any other anything to be contrary to that statement, Mr. Smith. I wasn't part of the actual discussions. Mr. Mattson was directly involved, and he's in front of the South Dakota Supreme Court today, but I certainly am comfortable with the dates as you describe them.
And staff would agree.
Thank you.
Any questions from the commissioners? Do we have a motion on the stipulations?
I will move that the commission approve the stipulation agreement as recommended by staff.
I would second.
And I concur. And then do we also need a motion on the stipulation agreement for the Sierra Club's withdrawal?
Yes.
Okay. And then I will move that we approve the stipulation agreement regarding the Sierra Club's withdrawal as a party.
Second.
Thank you. Now back to the regular agenda. Number
Thank
two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. Todd Guerrero going to sign off.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you.
As will Joanne Hosey. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. Now we'll go back to the regular agenda under electricity. Number two is EL06011 in the matter of the petition of Montana Dakota Utilities Company for approval to provide electrical service for the new North Central Farmers Elevator to be located near Bowdell, South Dakota. The question today is, shall the commission grant intervention to FEM, SDREA, and North Central Farmers Elevator? Good morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Darla Pullman Rogers. I am here today representing FEM and also SDREA. I have read the petitions to intervene. I believe all of the parties that have petitioned to intervene definitely have an interest in this docket, and I think the petitions speak for themselves. I would ask that you would grant intervention to the parties as requested.
Thank you very much. Do we have anyone objecting to the intervention? Or Mr. Gerst, would you care to comment on behalf of MDU?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, my name is Dave Gerst. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I represent Montana Dakota Utilities Company. We do not object to the interventions, but I wanted to come up here and take just a very short time, if I may, Mr. Commission, to invite or to introduce a guest. I have with me Amy Borgman, who is a second-year law student intern in our office, and I told her that this is where the rubber hits the road when it comes to the practice of law. And so I'd like to introduce her to you.
Thank you. Good morning, Amy.
I hope you told Ms. Borgman to keep her seatbelt on the entire commission meeting.
It also can help finance law school as well. Right. If your dad's doing significant practice there. Thank you very much. Any other comments on the intervention of FEM, SDREA, and North Central Farmers Elevator? Staff, any comments or concerns?
Staff has no objection to the intervention.
Commissioner, comments or motion?
I may have misheard Mr. Gerst, but Mr. Gerst, did you say you didn't have any objection to two of the interveners or to all three? No objection at all. Okay. With that, I will move that the Commission grant intervention to FEM, SDREA, and North Central Farmers Elevator.
I will second.
I concur.
Next item, number 3, is EL06013 in the matter of the petition of Ottertail Power Company for approval of renewal of a released energy tariff. And the question today is, shall the Commission approve the renewal of the released energy tariff? Mr. Sanger.
Yes. On April 24th of 2006, Ottertail filed to renew its released energy tariff in the South Dakota Electric Tariff Rate Book. This program allows Ottertail to make energy purchases from qualified South Dakota customers. This program was originally approved by the Commission in July of 2000. The program has been amended several times, and this filing just simply renews that filing. However, the difference is this is going to be on an ongoing basis. Previously, they had set 1 year and 2 year limitations on it. I've reviewed the filing, and I would just recommend that the Commission approve the renewal with the same restrictions or reporting requirements as found in the original docket and has been amended in following dockets.
Thank you very much. Any additional comments from Ottertail?
Yeah, this is Dave Ross with Ottertail, and that was a very nice job of recapping our release energy program. And I don't have any additional comments. I would just be open to any questions if you had any.
Thank you. We appreciate that, Mr. Ross. Any questions or comments from commissioners or council or advisors?
Mr. Singer, do other public utilities have a tariff similar to this?
We in South Dakota have, I think, three companies, Ottertail, Xcel, and I can't think of the other company off the top of my head. I don't think it's MDU, but I know Ottertail has just about the exact same tariff in North Dakota and Minnesota. This is something that took a nationwide trend back in about 2000. I'm not going to say all companies do, but we definitely have other neighboring commissions with the same tariff.
Thank you.
Any additional questions from commissioners or advisors? Is there a motion?
I move that the Commission approve the renewal of a released energy tariff.
Second.
And I concur. Next on the agenda is natural gas. Number 1 is NG06003 in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corporation doing business as Northwestern Energy for approval of a contract with deviations with Prairie Ethanol Plant. And the question today is, shall the Commission approve the contracts with deviations with Prairie Ethanol Plant? And is anyone representing Northwestern this morning? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Is there anyone representing the Prairie Ethanol Plant. Mr. Smith.
Pardon me?
Do you have something to note?
I just wanted to note that Commissioner Hansen has recused himself from this docket due to a conflict of interest that he has. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gerdes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, I do represent Northwestern on some matters before the Commission. I was not asked to appear on this, and so I could certainly relay a message, like have somebody on at the meeting, but as far as being able to respond intelligently to the matter on the docket, I cannot.
Well, and we appreciate that, and we'll see what staff has to say, and perhaps we'll take you up on the offer, but thank you for noting that for the record, and certainly we understand your predicament, so we appreciate you coming forward. Any comments from staff?
Yeah. The reason nobody's on the phone is because I'm going to request deferral of the site. we're getting very close to finishing it up, but we're not. We want to put together clear exhibits so the commissioner knows exactly the reasoning why we're going to recommend what we are going to recommend. So.
Thank you. With that, I will move that we defer the docket.
Second.
And if someone would be so kind as to let Commissioner Hansen know we're done with the docket.
I spent a lot of time getting ready for that one, too, so.
It was kind of all building up we had. And for those listening in, we're just notifying Commissioner Hansen that he can come back to the meeting. So please bear with us for a minute. All right. Next, we'll move to telecommunications. And number one under that, part of the agenda is TC-01098 in the matter of the determining prices for unbundled network elements in Quest Corporation's Statement of Generally Available Terms, or the SCAT. Today, shall the Commission grant the request to withdraw and close the docket? And I believe we have a request for a deferral on this. Is that correct?
Yes, that would be correct.
Okay, then I will move that we defer the docket.
Second. Concur.
Next item, number two, under telecommunications is TC-05197, in the matter of the filing by Northern Valley Communications LLC for an extension of an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switch access rates. And the question today is, shall the Commission grant the extension of an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switch access rates? And I'll look to the staff to see how you want to handle this procedurally.
Well, I'll let the party speak to the matter first, but just one point of clarification before we get too far into this is the question is a little confusing and should be changed. It should be changed to the question should be changed to today shall the Commission approve the settlement stipulation. But I will let Northern Valley talk first.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Graft, are you handling that?
Yep, Doug, did you want to speak to that?
I certainly can.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we don't want to take a lot of your time, but basically NBC filed back in November to continue the waiver it had gotten in the past. After discussing the matter with staff, they felt that a lesser rate would be in the public interest.
Therefore, we've been in negotiations for the last couple of months to arrive at a rate. And you'll see in the stipulation that we've basically agreed to ratchet down to an agreed rate. And I'd be free to answer any questions that anybody would have.
Thank you. Staff?
Staff would echo those comments as well. We have been in negotiations with Northern Valley for the past couple months and feel that we've come up with a fair and equitable settlement to get this matter resolved.
So you feel comfortable recommending that the commission approve the settlement today?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from commissioners? Commissioner Johnson?
This settlement agreement is similar to, but not exactly the same as some that we've done with other companies in the recent past. Any concern that the terms and conditions are a little different, specifically the phased-in ratchet down?
Staff has no issues with that. We take these on a case-by-case basis, and Northern Valley came to us with their circumstances. And in the end, we're getting down to the same rate that we have in our past dockets. They're just going into a step-down kind of phased-in method due to some constraints and worries about building in the loss of budget. But I'll let Northern Valley speak to those circumstances, too, if they'd like.
Commissioner Johnson, the main reason we've asked for the phase-in rate is that Northern Valley has had long-term budgets in place for some time, and it has built, you know, a significant portion of Aberdeen, multi-million dollar investment, and the investment was probably higher than some of the other CLEC waivers that the commission has approved in the past. And the planning continued where some of the other investments or waivers that the commission has granted, the construction had been completed in those cases where the ongoing construction in Aberdeen was an ongoing issue. So basically that's why we agreed to the phase-in, is to allow kind of a planning and timing window for NBC to adjust its plans to the new access rates.
And remind me, Ms. Greff, Mr. Sanger, this settlement agreement goes until there's a change with the way that the ICC on the federal level, or unless the commission makes some large rule changes, or 3 years, whatever comes first. Is that right?
That is correct.
And is that the same wording as the recent other agreements we've had?
I'm pretty sure it is. Keith, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
No, the wording on the other two settlements, I think, that you're discussing about kind of gives a specific time. The wording on this settlement stipulation mentions something about, I can't remember exactly what it states, but I think the way I interpret it, it says that the commission actually probably has to mandate a rate change. So it's if the FCC, ICC, docket comes about, they would actually have to mandate a rate change, or on the commission's rule changing, they may have to mandate a rate change. But the 3 years is the same. I would say that fundamentally we're close to the same. The language is different. I view it as saying something a little bit different.
I want to return for a second to the issue about the phase-in. And I don't know that I have a concern with the phase-in. I think my concern is more consistency. Is it also staff's? I mean, we heard from Northern Valley that they have a unique set of circumstances. Is it also staff's opinion that this situation is significantly different enough to take a little bit different approach?
It's something that raises a little concern with staff. However, due to the circumstances, we essentially, I guess those, it was either this or probably no settlement. So staff weighed its options and decided that we should probably take their offer. But there is some concern that lies there.
Any other follow-up questions or other questions from commissioners or questions from advisors? Seeing none, I would move the commission grant the extension of an exemption from developing, move that the commission grant the settlement. Or
approval
of the settlement.
Yep.
Thank you. I will move that the commission approve the settlement. Thank you. Next item, number 3 under telecommunications is TC05223 in the matter of the application of SS Telecom, Inc., all one word except for the Inc., for a certificate of authority to provide local exchange services in South Dakota. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the settlement stipulation? Mr. Best?
This is... thank you, Commissioner Schar. This is Sarah Graff for staff. Again, I will let SS Telecom speak on this matter first. Just a couple points of clarification. If you remember, a couple months back, the Commission granted a certificate of authority for SS Telecom. There was another question in that docket, and that is for the extension of an exemption from developing cost-based switched access rates, and again, we entered into a stipulation with the company on that matter, and that's what the question is for today. But I'll let SS Telecom start.
Doug, would you like to go ahead? Basically, the stipulation, commissioners, is identical to the NBC. The facts are a little bit different. As the staff attorney, Sarah, just mentioned, SS Telecom is just starting construction this summer in Milbank, but again has plans to make a major investment in Milbank with a fiber-to-the-home network, where it'll be overbuilding much of Milbank. So for much of the same reasoning as I talked about earlier with NBC, we came to this basically the same stipulation and settlement as NBC. And again, be glad to answer any questions.
Thanks. And Doug, just for the record, maybe you should note that it is Doug Idol there from Vantage Point. And do we have any additional comment from SS Telecom? Hearing
no,
none.
Commissioner, sorry.
Thank you. Hearing none, then why don't we see if there's any questions from commissioners or advisors?
No, thank you.
And I have none as well.
The staff would just again recommend approval of the settlement stipulation.
With that in mind, I will move that the commission approve the settlement stipulation.
Second.
Thank you. Next item on our telecom is number 4, TC06007, in the matter of the petition of Level 3 Communications, LLC, for arbitration of an interconnection agreement with Quest Corporation. And the questions today are, shall the commission assess a deposit not to exceed $75,000 on the parties to the docket pursuant to SDCL 493144, and shall the commission set a procedural schedule for the docket? And I think... do we need to turn to staff on this one first? Or do we need to hear from the parties?
Do you want to go, Mr. Gertis, first?
Okay, we'll go to the parties first. Mr. Gertis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I'm Dave Gertis, and I represent Level 3. My understanding, well, first of all, we have no objection to the assessment of the deposit, and secondly, there's been a stipulation to extend the deadline, so my understanding is there's no need for a procedural schedule, and that's fine with Level 3.
Okay, thank you. Any comments from Quest?
Yeah, this is Jason Topp from Quest. We agree regarding the stipulation and no need to set a procedural schedule at this time. We certainly wouldn't have an objection if the commission were to chose to request a deposit at this time. However, we note that since there has been a stipulation to extend the time frames by 6 months, you know, that may or may not become ultimately necessary, and would suggest that the decision of the deposit be deferred for that time period as well.
Thank you. Any additional comments from staff? And I think we are mulling your remarks at this point in time. Our Deputy Executive Director may have a question or comment on that.
I guess at this point, I'm not sure that we need to defer the question on the $75,000 deposit. The point is that we won't be assessing any amounts until actually, you know, the staff people are actually working on it. And I don't believe the initial assessment would be too much, would it?
This is Heather Forney, Deputy Director. My intention would be to not assess the $75,000 deposit immediately. That's the max. And so it would probably be somewhere in the range of $5,000. And then what happens in these types of dockets is if the expenses of the commission exceed that $5,000, then we send them a final bill once the docket's wrapped up. If it's less than the $5,000, then we refund them the difference. So I guess I don't know why we would need to defer the decision on that.
This is Jason Toppin. Certainly have no objection to that, and I apologize for the newness to the process. Just one point of clarification. My understanding is that would be both parties. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Any questions or comments from commissioners? Commissioner Johnson.
I have one for Ms. Forney. Ms. Forney, sometimes when the commission acts, it always sets a ceiling, but sometimes it sets an initial deposit as well, and sometimes we don't. Is there any rhyme or reason to the method used?
Usually for dockets that are going to be an extended period of time, we'll assess an initial filing fee, that deposit, because we're incurring expenses as we go. If it's going to be a short time frame, we're going to be done with it in a couple of months, 6 months, I don't usually worry about that initial deposit. We've got dockets out there that are years in existence, and so those we...
In some instances, the commission would actually make a motion, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, to do that initial $5,000, and sometimes we don't. Does it matter?
I don't think it matters at all as long as we get the money in the end.
Okay. Thanks.
I, Mr. Chairman, I think the motion is up to 75, and I think she basically sets it, in my experience.
I think you're correct. Any other additional questions or comments? Going once, going twice. Good questions. With the question being, shall the commission assess the deposit before us? I will move that the commission assess the deposit not to exceed $75,000 on the parties to the docket pursuant to SDCL 4931-44, and that the commission defer any action on setting a procedural schedule at this point in time.
Second.
Thank you. We already took care of item number 5 under telecommunications, the arbitration of the interconnection agreements. So that moves us all the way up to item number 6, which is TC06010 in the matter of the filing by Quest Corporation for approval of revisions to its exchange and network services tariff. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the revisions to the exchange and network services tariff, and shall the commission close docket TC02174? Quest?
Yes, this is Jason Topp. My understanding with respect to this tariff is that our initial filing some time ago, there were some issues raised with it. We have gone out and negotiated with PSAPs to reach an agreeable approach. I have Jim Carroll on the line, who's the product manager who negotiated the PSAPs, as well as Cindy Leverton, who responded to many of the interrogatories that we received through the process. We're happy to answer any questions that anyone may have, but ask that this be approved. And we're not aware of objections.
Thank you. Any comments from staff?
Yes, Chairman Saar, this is Harlan Best of staff. After the company filed their initial tariff, I requested a number of questions be answered by Quest. And in response to those, most of those questions were cost questions. In addition, they made some tariff modifications upon my request. The company filed revisions to their tariff on March 13 and then again on April 28th. What I would recommend is that the commission approve the tariffs as filed on March 28th.
Thank you.
April 28th.
Do we have any additional comments from any staff? I know that that from the PSAP standpoint, that they have had some concerns about pricing for some of the upgrades necessary for 911 enhanced services. Mr. Topp, I mean, could you just give me a little bit of an overview about what sort of issues that you hope that this tariff will resolve and what sort of services we're dealing with?
Yeah, actually, I think I'll defer to Mr. Carroll on that.
Okay. Mr. Carroll, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really, what we tried to attempt to, and I believe that we achieved in this tariff, was to remove a lot of language that really limited 911.
I'm sorry, Mr. Carroll, you're coming in pretty faintly. And
is this better?
Yeah, actually, that's quite a bit better. Thank you.
Great, thank you. What we did in this tariff with the help of the PSAPs was to make sure that the language wasn't limited to an analog type of service, which the previous tariff language had defined. So we now have the ability to provide the PSAPs, higher grades of service, whether it be SS7 or IP type of interfaces, as well as moving the structure for the cost basis away from being measured by access line and being measured by the number of records that are kept in the 911 database, so that the pricing and the cost to the PSAP were much more easily verifiable and identifiable.
Did you work directly with the South Dakota PSAPs?
We did. Or at least a representative group.
Okay, great. I mean, could you just, for the commission's standpoint, do you recall which ones you were working with on this issue?
You'll have to bear with me as I try to remember all of their PSAP names, but certainly Sioux Falls and Minnehaha County. I believe it's Pennington County. And then I'll have to defer to Colleen who else was represented.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to make it a test of South Dakota geography, so I can appreciate where you're coming from on that.
This is Colleen Seabold, and as I recall, it's the city of Sioux Falls, Minnehaha, Pennington, and Brown, and then I think also the association.
In my recollection, as they appeared earlier in the docket, is there absence a sign of anything? Has anyone talked directly with them? Are they comfortable with this? Are they not comfortable? Do we know staff how they're feeling about this?
This is Harlan Best. I did not speak directly to the interveners. My understanding is that they did file the confidentiality agreement so they could also get the responses to the questions that I asked. And they never got back to me with any further questions or anything on there beyond what I had asked. So my assumption is that they agree with the new rates that have been, that are recommended by, being recommended in the April 28 tariff filing.
Thank you. Ms. Forney?
This is Heather Forney, again. I was originally on that TC02174 docket and was in contact with the PSAPs throughout their negotiation and working process with Quest on this, even after my position changed. And prior to their filing this TC06010, they called to say that they were in agreement with Quest, that this is the information that they had reached, that they'd worked out the language, they'd worked out the pricing scheme. And so I did have contact with them prior to this filing.
Thank you. When you say prior to the filing, you mean the latest filing? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And that makes me feel more comfortable, because especially with parties that don't have a lot of experience in front of the commission, you always are concerned that maybe they just kind of missed the filing or missed the fact that this had been noticed for hearing. So that gives me a higher comfort level. Other questions from the commissioners? Questions or comments from advisors? Do we have a motion?
I did think it was helpful to have information from the ghost of analysts past, so thank you, Ms. Forney. I move that the Commission approve the revisions to the Exchange and Network Services Tariff and that the Commission close docket TC02-174.
Second.
And I concur. Next item under telecommunications is number 7, TC06021, in the matter of the application of Sprint Long Distance, Inc. for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services in South Dakota. And the question today is, shall the commission grant the request to withdraw and close the docket? Good morning, Mr. Harmon.
Good morning. Tom Harmon, representing Sprint Communications. They filed this application. They determined in looking at it that the relationship they were creating does not have any customers in South Dakota with the Sprint Long Distance, Inc. The day may come when it will, in which case we'll be back here. The business model is changing. Sprint requests that it application be withdrawn.
Thank you. Any comments from staff?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. This is Phil Lusk. And after due consideration and consultation with Mr. Harmon and other staff members, staff recommends that this application be withdrawn.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the commissioners for Mr. Harmon or staff? Seeing none, I will move that the commission grant the request to withdraw and close the docket.
Second.
And thank you very much for appearing today, Mr. Harmon.
Thank you.
Next item, number 8, is TC06022, and I have been told that we're going to take this along with, if I can get my notes right, it's also telecom number 2 in the addendum, and the docket is the matter of the petition for arbitration and approval of interconnection agreements between Quest Corporation and Dakota Electronics, Golden West Technologies, Inc., Nextel West Corporation, Vantech Communications, Inc., and Priority Paging, Inc. And I will look to Ms. Wiest with the questions. Do we just want to take the question as phrased on the addendum?
I think yes. I mean, what is happening here is these are the final three companies that were in this arbitration. Mm-hmm. So once you dismiss the petitions for those, the two on the regular agenda and the one on the addendum, then you can just close the docket.
Okay. So the question today on the agenda is, shall the commission dismiss the petitions for approval of interconnection agreements as to respondents Dakota Electronics and Nextel West Corp and close the docket? And on the addendum, the question is, shall the commission dismiss the petition for approval of interconnection agreement as to respondent Vantech Communications, Inc. and close the docket? And Ms. Wiest, I'll look to you procedurally how you want to proceed.
I would just ask if Quest had any comments on it.
This is Jason Topp. We filed this request because we were in the process of trying to comply with the T-Mobile order out of the FCC, which required us to enter into agreements. There had been some companies throughout our service territory which that had not happened for a variety of reasons, and therefore we filed this docket. Since that time, we've worked to try and reach agreements with the companies that are out there, and we have gotten that process done for South Dakota.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from staff, commissioners, or advisors? And if not, do we have a motion?
I'll move that the commission dismiss the petition for approval of interconnection agreement as to respondent Vantech Communications Incorporated and dismiss the petitions for approval of interconnection agreements as to respondents Dakota Electronics and Nextel West Corporation and close the docket.
And I'll second. Thank you. Item number 9 under telecommunications is TC06031. In the matter of the filing for approval of an amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and XO Communication Services, Inc. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement? Staff?
I would look to Mr. Topp to see if he has any questions or any comments.
No, I do not. I don't recall anything specifically associated with this. I'll try and answer questions the best I can.
Thank you. Staff?
These are your typical interconnection. This is your typical interconnection agreement. Staff reviewed it. It contains no discriminatory language. There was no comments filed, and we would recommend approval.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from commissioners and or advisors? If not, I will move that the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Second. Concur.
Next item, number 10 under telecommunications, is TC-06032 in the matter of the filing for approval of Type 1 and Type 2 paging connection service agreement between Quest Corporation and Dakota Electronics. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the Type 1 and Type 2 paging connection service agreement? And I'll look to staff to see how to proceed on this one.
Again, unless Mr. Topp has any comments, the agreement was properly filed with the commission. It contains no discriminatory language. No comments were filed during the 20-day time frame, and we would recommend approval.
Any comments from Quest?
No.
Any questions, comments, or motions from commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the commission approve the Type 1 and Type 2 paging connection service agreement.
Second.
And I concur. Next item, number 11, TC-06033, in the matter of the filing of an adoption agreement between Rural Cellular Corporation and Prairie Way Black Hills, LLC. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the adoption agreement? And Ms. Greff, do we want to hear from the parties first?
I don't know if anybody's on the line for this one.
Well, we do have
Pat Mastel.
Pat Mastel and Tal Wysorek have indicated they're on the line.
I would look to parties then if they have any comments.
Any comments from the parties?
This is Pat Mastel, Commission, and I have no comments. We're just basically approving a previous agreement and just expanding it to the Hill.
Thank you. And I don't know if Mr. Wysorek's still on the line. I know he was on for an earlier docket. Tal, are you still on the line?
He is not on the line. He's returned to a deposition.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Greff?
Staff has reviewed the agreement. Again, it contains no discriminatory language. It was properly filed. No comments were filed, and we would recommend approval of it.
Thank you. Any questions, comments, or motions from commissioners?
I move that the commission approve the adoption agreement.
Second.
And I concur. Last, under the regular agenda, before we go back to the addendum, administration item number one is consideration of the new purpose standards. The question today is, shall the commission open a docket and accept comments on how to proceed with its consideration of the new purpose standards? And if yes, what shall be the deadline for comments? Ms. Wiest?
Thank you. Under the Energy Policy Act of 2005, they did put in 5 new federal standards for PURPA, and so these standards have varying timelines within which the commission is required to consider and decide whether they want to adopt them or not. With this, what I would ask the commission to do is open a docket, and essentially we're getting comments on how to proceed. There are different standards. The questions are, should they all be placed in the same docket? Should some of them be grouped? Some of the standards have different timelines. And so any interested party or entity or person could comment on these procedural issues. And then I would also recommend that the commission set a deadline, and I thought Tuesday, June 20th would work, because I would like the comments in prior to July 1st. July 1st is when our statute, which specifically gives us the authority to do this, goes into effect. And then I would anticipate that in July at the commission meeting, the commission would open dockets on these matters.
Thank you. Are there any comments from, and I'm certainly not soliciting them if they're not there, but we do have people in the room and on the line that represent various electricity utilities, gas utilities, and so forth. Any comments from anyone on the proposal? And I do have a question. With the second part of the question, when did you say you want the deadline? Do you want the deadline to be June 20th for the comments?
Yes, I just picked it as gives them 4 weeks. I thought that would be sufficient.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments from commissioners? Seeing none, then I will move the commission open docket and accept comments on how to proceed with the consideration of the new purpose standards, and that the commission set the deadline of Tuesday, June 20th for the comments.
Second. I concur.
Thank you. Next, we'll go back to the addendum.
Carl Anderson
is joining the meeting.
Impeccable timing, Carl.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Under the addendum to the agenda of the commission meeting, first item is administration. Number one under administration is in the matter of the potential adoption of rules regarding emergency grain storage for state-licensed grain storage warehouses. And the question today is, how shall the commission proceed? And I'll look first to the staff and Mr. Melhoff. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The blurb that I prepared for this pretty much spells out what the situation is. USDA sent the memo telling the grain elevators that they could request permission to store CCC grain on the ground. The first rule on that memo was that they received permission from the licensing authorities in order to have the emergency storage. Under our current rules, we are not allowed to allow that. I guess it would fly in the face of what we currently have in our administrative rules. So we were unable to allow the ground piles, which has resulted in a not a huge migration, but there has been kind of a steady migration of state warehouses to the federal system. Some of our warehouses believe in the state system. They prefer dealing with the state. They can get a hold of our office when they call, and our system provides significantly better protection for the consumers. So as a result of not being able to, one of the elevators has said that they are looking to leave the system, but that they really don't want to, and they contacted Mr. Anderson from the Grain and Feed Association and asked him to contact our office and try to get us to make some changes in our current rules so that we can accommodate these requests and give that good service to our state licensed elevators.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson?
Well, that pretty well sums it up. We have long been proponents of the state system because, as was just stated, it provides more protection to the producers and frankly, easier response from the standpoint of licensing and all the questions that go along with it. And agriculture has changed, and it's time that we change with it. And we recommend that we begin this proceeding and welcome the opportunity to be a part of it, the process.
And thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. We appreciate your assistance on this issue. It appears to me it may necessitate some type of rule change. Do you have any comments about that?
I'm sorry,
I'm sorry. It looks like we may need to make some rule changes.
Yes.
And
to allow emergency storage differentiate that from temporary storage.
Okay, thank you. Any additional comments from staff?
No, Mr. Jim.
Seeing none, any comments from – I'll go first to our general counsel because I think he has some, and then go to commissioners. Thank you.
Either or if the commissioners have questions, by all means. Mine are really related to timing, and I don't care whether Jim or Carl or both. Would it be something else that you would want the commission to do today to establish some initial parameters such as comment dates and that? I guess, and maybe prefacing that, what kind of time constraints do you perceive us as being under here? When does this happen during a year, this issue with the CCC and all of that? Is this a fall thing? Are we looking at the beginning of the wheat harvest as something we need to shoot for? I know we want to move expeditiously, but are there any particular time exigencies here that we should try to meet?
Yes, actually, I mean, as soon as possible, which is a very vague system, but when we start hitting harvest in the fall is when the problems are going to start occurring for the state-licensed operators.
Mr. Anderson, do you have anything to add?
Well, and actually, what time is of the essence because we want to get this accomplished, actually, before the licensing, which is July. Can you folks hear me okay?
Well, because somebody signed off, we just lost the last part, so you're saying you want to get this before the licensing comes up, and that's where I lost you. So if you could pick up your thoughts from there, Mr. Anderson, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, that's right, because they want to make these elevators that are contemplating making the change would not want to get licensed by the state and then turn around and change to the federal at some other date, because then you've got overlapping licenses and you get into the issues of can you get your bond and all that stuff back from the state when you go to the federal. And so we want to do this and have it in place before July 1st, which is going to require that we post notice I'm sure you folks know how the procedure for the rulemaking.
Well, I know there are procedures for emergency rulemaking, mm-hmm. and that may be appropriate here. I cannot remember exactly what the timelines are or what the effective date are. I'm going to look to our three attorneys and anyone else in the room that might know how that might proceed. But if time is of the essence, we may want to look and see if this qualifies for emergency rulemaking. And there's nothing like asking the attorneys to guess on some sort of procedural and deadline issue on the spot. But I'll look to see if anyone has researched that or knows that off the top of their head.
Ms. Wiest has been involved with a lot more rulemakings of late than I have, and she may want to chime in here with her observations.
Well, if you want to go ahead, but I mean, and maybe for today, you may not need the exact instruction on how to proceed, but if you have it handy, Ms. Wiest.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the timelines are for emergency rules either, or whether this would actually even meet the requirements for adoption of emergency rules. Off the top of my head, I'd say it would be doubtful that we would be able to do this by July 1st. I think what the commission could do is today just state that you want to open a rulemaking docket on this. You don't have to specify what type of rulemaking docket.
But this, this is Carl Anderson again. I think if we were reasonably certain that we were going to get this done before the harvest, that'd be okay. They would want to see that this process was well on the way before the licensing, before July 1st.
And I think that, I think kind of the combination of perhaps what you said and what Ms. Wiest has commented on, I think we can give instruction to staff to pursue rulemaking, leave it open-ended, and if the emergency rulemaking is available and can get this done sooner, great. And if not, Mr. Anderson, I think your comments are hopefully enough for industry to feel comfortable that we're moving in the right direction and can resolve this in a quick manner. Obviously, this is an important issue for your group, and we certainly don't want to see people migrate to another system if they'd rather be in the state system. So I think it sounds like we probably should be able to accomplish that, and I presume we can work out some of the procedural details over the next several days.
Mr. Chairman, a question for Ms. Wiest, if it's appropriate.
Yes, please.
How likely would it be that the commission would be able to have some proposed rules before July 1st so that people could see the direction that at least staff was planning on moving?
That would definitely be easy to do.
Then I would just, Ms. Chairman, perhaps add as instruction to staff, make their best efforts to attempt to have some proposed rules by that time, in that time frame. Thanks.
Mr. Commissioner Johnson, I mean, we've already pretty well fleshed out the proposed rules. I think we can have them done by the end of this week, maybe by the end of the day.
Well, and we're just looking at another. I mean, basically, what we have here is that the exceptions to the rules are just don't allow for this particular situation. So, within the context of the current rules, basically, we just either add another exception or else refine the particular section of the rules. Is that what we're looking at?
I think what we're talking about is, like as Mr. Melhoff said, probably creating a different category. Right now, we have we just have one separate category, and that's called temporary storage. We need something that puts these things into a category of their own, so we need to do that. The only real issues on it then are, I mean, one of the questions that we've discussed, I've discussed it with Carl, is whether we need that temporary storage rule at all, because that's one of the things that caused the concern. I think it was Carl's opinion that we should leave that intact. And if we do, then we need to create a separate category that we'll call emergency rules, probably to make our language coincident with what the CCC seems to term this. And then the only other things are what limitations, definitions, etc. we want to have on that. The CCC, for example, has a maximum emergency storage time limit of January 31st of each year. And that's, of course, I think, partially to make sure the grain's off the ground before the wet season hits. And I think to also, I mean, maybe somewhat logically, is if you don't have any time limit, then emergency storage becomes forever storage. And just to have it have some integrity, you have to have something that defines it as something different than forever. But those are a few little issues, and we've actually worked through those, and I think we can have a draft for circulation out extremely rapidly, if that's what the commission wants to do.
And Mr. Smith, I knew that the staff had been working on this a bit. I was just trying to under-promise and over-deliver, as opposed to promising by end of business today. So.
All right. And I'm fond of doing, I can't remember whether it's the former or the latter.
Well, you're supposed to, knowing that in advance, you're supposed to do a little more grandstanding then and saying this needs to be taken care of this week. No matter what staff's doing, put it all on hold.
Nobody's more important than Mr. Anderson and his group to the commission.
You want me to say that?
No, you're supposed to say just the opposite of that, right?
Oh.
No, we appreciate the input, though, and it sounds like we're in good shape to get something in place that's going to meet the needs of the industry. So thank you, Mr. Anderson, for your efforts.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is precisely why we prefer dealing with the state of South Dakota instead of Kansas City Commodity Credit. And we have real people that we can talk to and get a response, and we appreciate that, and we want you folks to know that.
Well, thank you. That's very nice. We appreciate that. Do we have a motion? If not, I'll go ahead and move that the commission instruct staff to take steps to amend the administrative rules or propose amendment to the administrative rules to address the concerns of the emergency storage of grain and open a rulemaking docket with that regard. Is that hopefully that wasn't too is that too specific or is that thank you. Next item under administration number 2, in the matter of a contract for a qualified electrical engineer. And the question in this docket or this item under the agenda is: shall the commission authorize staff to enter into a consulting contract with an electrical engineering firm to review the facts and issues surrounding this matter? Ms. Graff, are you handing this for staff?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Starr. We have a unique situation before us. Deb Gregg, down in our Consumer Affairs Department, got a complaint involving a manufacturer and a municipality. We've been trying for the last month or so to, mediate between the parties, and it's now come to the point where we have reason to believe that a formal complaint is going to be filed by the company. It's dealing with an adequacy of service issue, and pursuant to our statutes, once that complaint gets filed, we have 15 days to hold a hearing in the matter. So time is of the essence. The company has not formally filed their complaint yet, but we have every indication that it's coming this week. In dealing with the parties on the matter, the highly technical issues involved, we have realized that it's all above our heads, and currently on staff, we do not have an electrical engineer. So Ms. Gregg and I have been frantically trying to find an electrical engineer for the past week, which is no easy task, trying to find one that is has no conflict of interest, being with the current parties, providers that may be able to take over the service if that's a necessity. So we're currently, we have one bid, we have two more coming in, and So it's pretty vague on, as far as not being able to give you a number right now. However, as I said, time is of the essence, so once that number comes in, we would like the authority to enter into a contract so that work can be, you know, work can begin and we won't have to hold an ad hoc later. So I would entertain any questions because I'm sure you probably have some.
We'll just jump to questions from commissioners. Mr. Johnson.
Would you have any ballpark figure if the commission wanted to set a ceiling?
Well, right now, a ceiling for an in-state, someone getting someone in-state, I would set at probably 10,000, but we are finding that we can't find anybody without conflicts in-state. We're right now looking at Georgia. So I would, as possible firms to handle this, we've tried Minnesota, we've tried Wisconsin. We are looking at one in North Dakota right now as coming in, so maybe that one will be a little more ballpark. But I'm guessing then it's going to be in the 20 to 25,000. I know. We staff is just at a loss at how else to handle this because we don't have anybody else on staff that can look at. I mean, the unique aspect of this is you need someone on the power utility side to handle power distribution from the city's perspective, and then also on the small electrical side dealing with the company's electronics as well. So you need to find an engineer that can handle both those aspects.
Would staff have any concerns if the commissioners approved the motion with, you know, a $30,000 ceiling or something? I don't know that it's necessarily helpful, but
I wouldn't have a problem with that. We just want the authority to quick enter into and we can always come back and change it if we need to.
Under the state contract requirements, we're going to have to put in a maximum anyway. So yeah. I would think it probably would make sense to set it. You're going to have to pick a number sooner or later, and that sounds as appropriate as anything to me from what I've heard. And then we also have some control over to where if things, for whatever reason, end up getting more expensive, then they'll have to come back to us for approval for additional monies. Any other questions from commissioners or a motion?
I'd move the commission authorize staff to enter into a consulting contract with a value up to $30,000 with an electrical engineering firm to review the facts and issues surrounding this matter.
And I concur. Thank you. Next item on the addendum is consumer complaints CE06002 in the matter of the complaint filed by Sioux Valley Southwestern Electrical Cooperative, Inc., doing business as Sioux Valley Energy, against Northern States Power Company, doing business as Xcel Energy, regarding provision of electrical service to Merle and Roy's Paving. And the question today is, shall the commission grant the petition for intervention to Merle and Roy's Paving? And is anyone representing the paving company?
Yes, Mr. Commissioner. This is Ryan Taylor with Cutler and Donahue.
Oh, thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
Would you care to comment?
Yes, Mr. Commissioner. The consumer issue here is Merle and Roy's Paving Company. It appears to be coming down to factual representations as far as where the load will be located after the modification to their facilities goes into place. And how mobile that facility is, and Merle and Roy's is the party that is in possession of those facts, and they're clearly an interested party.
Thank you. Anyone care to supply additional comments?
Yes, Commissioner Sarge, this is Sarah Greff from staff. I have talked to Sioux Valley Energy's attorney as well as Mr. Gerdes, Xcel's attorney, and they both, as well as staff, do not have any objection to the intervention by Merle and Roy's.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from commissioners? Seeing none, then I will move that the commission grant petition for intervention to Merle and Roy's Paving.
Second.
Then moving down the agenda, we handled the electricity portion, so we're back to telecommunications. And item number one on our telecommunications is TC05153 in the matter of the review of the implementation of 811 as a national abbreviated dialing code for one call notification. And the question today is, how shall the commission proceed? And I'll look to commission staff for how they want to handle this one.
Thank you, Commissioner Saar. Larry Englert, the executive director of the South Dakota One Call board, is here, and he will take any comments give some comments and take questions from the commission.
Thank you very much, Mr. Englert.
Hi, I'm Larry Englert with South Dakota One Call Commission,
or board, commissioners. Basically, the 811 system was put in place by an FCC order March of last year with the intent to improve specifically homeowner access to damage prevention of underground facilities and improve public safety. In that order, they granted the local or the state commissions the authority to handle technical and operational issues. And in reviewing the comments you previously received, I believe our board would like to put forward three recommendations for you to consider, which I from my reading, are consistent with the others. First of all, we contract out the vendor answering service, but in the process, the One Call Board maintains ownership of the 1-800 number that those calls go to. We would encourage you to assign the 811 number to the South Dakota One Call Board. Since we own the 1-800 number, should we eventually change vendors, we could, in effect, move that right with us and not assign it to the vendor. The second thing, if you're familiar, as we're all familiar with the weather in South Dakota, the FCC has an effective date of April 13th of 2007. Our primary construction season usually kicks off very heavily in the middle of March. We would like to encourage you to adopt an implementation date of December 31st of this year. That allows both ourselves as a board and the utilities that did public service announcements to create their advanced spring marketing campaigns to highlight the 811 and move forward. And I believe that will be consistent with the companies that we've at least talked to. And lastly, I'd like you to establish a positive response system where the telecommunications companies, et cetera, would advise either the commission or the board that they have completed this so that we don't end up starting our advertising program and, in effect, someone hasn't converted and we end up with some type of major damage or catastrophe that could be prevented. Those are really the three items that we see that would serve the implementation of this effectively without undue burden of any of the telecommunications companies. With that, I'd take any questions that someone might have.
Thank you. And I think what we might do is see if there's any comments from any of the industry people. And then if you wouldn't mind standing by for questions, we appreciate your comments this morning. Mr. Coit, good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, my name is Richard Coit. I'm with the South Dakota Telecommunications Association. Mr. Englert and I have had a number of conversations regarding the implementation. I can say currently, I know that we have at least several companies, if not more. I haven't done any comprehensive survey at this point, but we do have some companies that have already converted, and that number is available for that purpose. With respect to the recommendations, I guess the only one that I have any question about is the implementation timeline. In speaking or in conducting at least kind of an informal email survey as of late, certainly as an industry, for the most part, we don't have any member companies that have any trouble or problems with converting things by the end of this year. We do have a couple that I'm aware of that publish their directories right after the first of the year. And so before they convert, they would like to kind of get that notice out there via their directories. There are certainly other ways that they can look at notifying customers. But with respect to the implementation timeline, in looking at the FCC order, I think the FCC was pretty clear that the states did not have authority to actually alter the implementation timeline. But again, just generally, the SDTA is certainly not averse to getting things started earlier. It's certainly a good thing for consumers. It's not from the technical side. My understanding that really all that needs to be done is number translations. They need to go into their switches and make number translations. And so from the technical side, there are not a lot of burdens to getting it done. But, again, it's a timing thing from the notice standpoint primarily. So when it comes to the implementation, I can certainly understand why Mr. Englert would want to get things done by the end of the year, and we will cooperate to the full extent we can. If there's a couple of companies, though, that have certain concerns, we would like, you know, some flexibility to deal with those. Other than that, I don't have any comments, and I do appreciate the cooperation that we've gotten from the One Call Board through the last year and a half or so since we started working on this.
Thank you. And Mr. Coyne, if you'd stand by for questions as well as Mr. Engler, I'll see if there's any other communications providers that have comments, then go to staff and then see what questions commissioners might have. So thank you. We have a number of communications providers on the line. Did anyone want to add additional comments, or is anyone in the audience on behalf of any of the providers, consumers, et cetera, who would like to make additional comments?
Mr. Chairman, this is Colleen Siebold from Quest. It's my understanding that we would have no problem with the earlier implementation date, so we would be okay with it.
Thank you. Staff?
I guess staff would echo the comments of the One Call Board as well as the Telecommunications Association. We realize there might be some, you know, technical difficulty for upping the implementation date, but we'd really like the commission to encourage earlier implementation date, as well as the other recommendations made by the board.
And along those lines, Mr. Coyne had made a comment about that the FCC date could not be changed, but if they voluntarily agree to do it earlier, I assume we're okay with that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
I know other states have gotten earlier implementation dates.
And that's what I've had a couple presentations on this issue, and that was my recollection as well. And Mr. Inglis, is that correct?
That's correct. I believe the state of Illinois, one of those is ordered in July 1st, this year date. Okay. So I'm not the lawyer to interpret that type stuff, but we certainly are
Yeah, and I really do think it boils down to whether the carriers in the state, you know, are willing to do it on a voluntary basis. There is specific language in the order in paragraph 35, though, that does indicate that the states were not given the authority to alter the implementation timeline, but if everybody in the state that needs to do it is willing to step forward and do it earlier, I don't see any problem with that. And all I can say today is that we're willing to do as much as we can do to try to get it in by the end of the year.
Mr. Engleth, if you wouldn't mind coming to the mic, it might be beneficial because we do broadcast this via the web and archive it. And I'll let you go ahead and make additional comments, and we may have some questions for you.
I'll just go forward. And first of all, to address, I do not see any issue with the recommendation that the Telephone Association put forward. We believe we can work that out very comfortable. The question, though, other states have mandated that, but I don't think we need to get into that type of disputed issue here. We have the cooperative nature, and I think with our request of the third one with a positive response system, that if that's included, that they inform us, we certainly can work around those dates. Ours would be more in the development that once we know everybody's converted, the people can still develop the advertising, but that then they know what their release date is. So, with the third step of that, which Rich is in agreement with, that they would advise us when they are done, if someone doesn't finish till the 15th of January, that would not be an issue to us as a board. We certainly can work with them on that.
Okay. And I do think it's a very positive development because I think there's a few things that are more important than these sort of safety issues, and certainly loss of life, damage to utilities and the costs involved in that. And, you know, the personal costs as well are very, very high. I also do know that these N11 numbers, there aren't a lot left out there, so we have to choose very carefully, but certainly seems to be a very, very appropriate use of an N11 number. I have a couple questions. When we're making this transition to 811, if somebody's out there and they still know the 800 number, is that 800 number going to remain live for a period of time?
The 800 number will remain live forever.
Okay, good.
Because you actually have, if you're dialing within South Dakota, you will go to the South Dakota One Call Board Center. If you're calling from Minneapolis and want to talk to South Dakota One Call, you have to dial the 1-800 number. So what you'll generally find is a professional excavator will leave the 1-800 number in their speed dial and use it forever. The residents that uses it once a year that never remembers the 1-800 number will now remember 811. So they will both be there, both work. It just call forwards it in, so it'll be basically blind to the caller.
Okay, and I assume that in your materials, I mean, probably 811 will be in super large font, and then hopefully you do kind of track the 800 number. I mean, in just in case, I mean, we're dealing with a transition. I'd hate to have someone January 3rd trying to call up 811, have trouble, and not be able to have at their fingertips the 800
number. I believe
number.
It will be laid out 811 or. Okay. And you will also see that our neighboring states, if everyone follows through on the back of the handouts to the professional excavators, will carry the neighboring states' 800 numbers. So that our book would carry North Dakota, South Dakota, or North Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, and Wyoming. They would do it conversely so that people that were used to 811 had to go to a different one would be there.
And I appreciate your comment about who owns 811 because those things can become an issue. Certainly, I agree with your comments and certainly would request that the board plus staff and anyone else reviewing legal agreements, I mean, just make sure that you can hang on to those 800 and 811 numbers, and maybe we just kind of take care of that. At the same time, you know, we just want that abundantly clear because we hate to see a switch in vendor and have us somehow lose you know, such an important number.
Well, what North Dakota actually signed it to the vendor, which was brought my attention to, that we didn't want it that way, but our contract with our vendor specifically states the 800 number is owned by the South Dakota One Call Board. So should we change vendors, the number goes with us.
Thank you. And I should see, do we have any other questions from commissioners? Commissioner Johnson.
Larry, would it be the intention of the board that they wouldn't do any advertising of that number then until there's the positive response system indicates 100% conversion?
That's correct.
Okay.
Because we know, like, Verizon Cellular is totally done right now. If you hit 811 at Verizon, you're going to South Dakota One Call. But, per se, until we know they're all done, we will not embark on a mass advertising program.
And then Mr. Coit indicated that he didn't think for any of his members was any kind of a technical or financial hardship. Is that what you're hearing from all of the providers?
That's generally what we're hearing from all of the providers.
Okay. Thank you.
And then a follow-up question to Commissioner Johnson's first question is and just kind of procedural, I just want to make sure I understand how this works. And I think it makes a lot of sense to use December 31st as a deadline, but you're really going to need to, I mean, you can run out and print up yardsticks and so on and so forth and have it ready so that even if it was January 15th, it wouldn't really matter much. But you're probably going to, you're going to need to know actually then before December 31st from these providers that they're all up and running if you're going to start advertising.
Well, I'm assuming
either at or right near either before or after that date, correct?
I think most of your advertising will take off in the early March timeframe because the only people digging in South Dakota in the winter are your professional excavators. The homeowners haven't started yet. So I believe you will see the printing and the making of public service announcement, that type, will all occur during that January-February timeframe, and then the release would be there. But it gives us that safety valve that if someone isn't there and we haven't had a response, we can call up to see if it's a response error or transition error, that it gives us a couple months to clean up anything that might be missing to make sure we don't make an error.
And I assume you engage in some type of testing? I mean, I would hope so.
Most of those that go around, the companies are all testing their own. I guess when I drove this spring for X-ray meeting, when I was in Mobridge, I had 811 and I got South Dakota One Call that as I traveled, dialed 811 just to see if it worked. But once we had a positive response, I believe most of your testing would stay with that local company, that once we had a response, we're going to make the assumption that they have done that test call.
Okay, so part of that positive response system is then to get an indication from the companies to the commission to the One Call Board that
yes.
Everything's up and running, it's been tested.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from commissioners? And I should, just to make sure that I didn't unnecessarily cut anybody off, Quest was nice enough to comment. I want to make sure that there wasn't any sort of follow-up comments from any of the other service providers that may be on the line. Okay, hearing none, Mr. Coit, Mr. Englerth, Ms. Greff, any additional comments?
I do.
Ms. Weeks?
Thank you. I'm acting as commission counsel on this. Okay. And just for a recommendation on how to proceed, I think that the commission could issue an order and ask for that positive response and find out who actually, you know, when they're going to be able to provide the service from all the affected telephone companies. With respect to the first two recommendations, that's the first I've heard of those two recommendations, and I would like the ability for any other telephone company to actually respond to those first two recommendations, that is the assignment of the 811, and whether the commission should adopt or mandate a date or should it be a voluntary date. And so I guess my recommendation would be issue an order telling the companies that they have to tell us, you know, when they're going to be up, and then actually ask questions on the first two recommendations just to see what issues there are out there on those two. Does that sound okay with staff?
Absolutely.
And it would appear that we are still in a situation where there's plenty of time to give people the opportunity. And frankly, it's probably a pretty good educational tool, even if nobody objects. At least it's then teed up to the companies. I mean, it sounds like Mr. Coit's organization is all over this and has kind of put the word out. But we don't know. There's certainly a lot of telecommunications providers out there. We don't know if all of them know about this. So I think that might make a lot of sense. Mr. Coit, any comments on that?
I think that recommendation sounds good. I would say that, you know, probably the most important thing, you know, from the One Call Board's perspective is to get notice at some point, you know, as to when a company is ready to go. So to me, that's the most critical thing. And I would just say, as an industry association, we will do all we can to get our members to get that done with One Call as quickly as they can.
Thank you, Ms. Graff.
Just a point, if it helps you at all, that Quest, the SDATC, and One Call were the only three that commented the first time around.
Okay. Thank you. Now, someone joined the meeting. Was that Mr. Wysorek? Was that you joining again?
Actually, it's Colleen Siebold, and somehow I got cut off.
Okay. Thank you. I couldn't hear. We're trying to figure out who joined us. Thank you very much. I think the Commission Council's recommendations make a lot of sense. Any questions from the commissioners on that?
So at this point, we defer action on all three components. I mean, there wouldn't be any need to make an order about the positive response system on its own today, would there be?
Well, I thought that you actually would ask companies. The companies would be required to tell you when they are going to have this the ability to do the 811. And so that would be the order, and staff could work with the companies to make sure that we notified all of the companies that they get this order and respond to the commission.
So at the same time they were informed of the commission's action on number three, their feedback would be requested on items one and two?
Right.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Yeah. That would everything would be in the same order, I guess.
I will move that the commission proceed as recommended by our general counsel on this matter.
Second. Concur.
That concludes the addendum. I believe we've taken care of all the agenda items. Is that correct? We're bouncing back and forth quite a bit. I want to make sure we didn't miss anything. With that, we will go to announcements. Number one, the next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be held June 13, 2006 at 1:30 p.m. at DDN sites in Rapid City, Sioux Falls, Mitchell, and Pier. Two commission meetings are scheduled for July 11th and August 8, 2006. Three, a hearing in docket RM06001 will be held May 24, 2006 in room 412, State Capitol Building, Pier. The hearing will begin at 2 p.m. Four, the PUC offices will be closed Monday, May 29, 2006, in observance of Memorial Day. And a fifth item that is not on the – oh, fifth, we do have a fifth item. A fifth item that is on there, a hearing in docket EL05002, will be held June 26 through 30th, 2006, in room 412, State Capitol Building and Pier. The hearing will begin at 9:30 a.m. on Monday, June 26. And, of course, that's the Bakestone 2 power plant hearing. And then a final item that's not on there is I will just announce or let folks know that I am going to have the opportunity to testify before the United States Senate Commerce Committee hearing on Thursday, and I'll be dealing with an issue that the commission took up over a month ago in April, where we had a meeting in Sioux Falls on the delivery of coal to power plants in the upper Midwest. And I've been asked to testify on behalf of the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners, our national association, and look forward to bringing the South Dakota and regional perspective to the issue. Last time I testified, I was on C-SPAN 3, which I don't think anyone gets. So I'm hoping I can move up the chain so that at least my mom can have a chance to watch me. Nobody else will want to. But it is available. There also is webcast as well if anyone is interested in. It's certainly an important proceeding to the region and to our utilities. Thank you.
And the seventh item, 4 hours and 20 minutes ago, my daughter-in-law and my son went into Sioux Valley Hospital to have my fifth grandchild, and I am anxiously waiting to find out.
All right, here.